Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to 100 sales leaders around the world to understand the impact of COVID-19 on revenue. And we've combined these insights into one single report that covers the immediate impact, the commercial outlook, the tech stack that you need, and actionable advice for sales leaders. You can claim this whole report completely for free if you go to ebster.com/COVID. That's ebster.com/COVID. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales operations onto the show to deconstruct the why, what, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Ebster, the leading customer engagement platform for Salesforce. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today we're joined by Jeremy Donovan, who is currently the SVP of Sales Strategy and Operations at SalesLoft. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I'm super excited about this episode because Jeremy has a wealth of experience, but in also a breadth of commercial fields. So we have marketing, we have strategy, and we have sales. And the other thing I'm excited about is because Jeremy works at SalesLoft, who, if people don't know listening, create software for salespeople. And so the person who is leading sales strategy at a company that does software for salespeople, I'm thinking is going to be on the cutting edge and it's going to have some great insights for us. Jeremy, am I right about that?
Hopefully I will. I guess the breadth of experience equates to being old. So thanks for putting it so nicely.
So let's kick it off. As I mentioned, you've been in different areas in the commercial space. At what point did you first move into sales operations?
It was much later in my career, actually. So I started my career as a semiconductor engineer way back. And I moved progressively through the world of being a technology industry analyst into product, into marketing. And I think it's only been about a decade or so, which I guess sounds like a long time. But so about 10 years ago, I moved into sales strategy, sales operations, and I was a CRO briefly as well.
And so the question here is, why did you make that shift?
Yeah, great question. It's rare that anyone asked me that. I appreciate that you did. The way I've intentionally, unintentionally managed my career is I have ended up pursuing areas where analytics and the engineering that I learned and continue to try to pick up in computer science and so on when I was younger, I can then apply. So that is what drew me to marketing originally, when marketing, 15 plus years ago was being transformed from purely the creative brand sort of marketing over to the hyper analytical, demand gen based marketing in the B2B world. That drew me into marketing. And then similarly, sales has been undergoing that transformation for years. And it's still, I think we still have a ways to go, which means it's really exciting to solve different problems. I think there's an incredible kind of analytical problems to solve in forecasting, for example, in territory assignment, in account scoring. So there's still this incredible frontier of analytical problems to solve in sales.
Got it. And I've definitely had that almost since the start of these interviews. I've had people say the importance of the analytical, mathematical, scientific side of sales ops. And so it kind of makes sense, right? Because you have that engineering background from before. And so it does kind of make sense to me that you gravitated towards this more analytical field as opposed to doing like the creative brand stuff that you may have been doing before in marketing.
Yeah, that one would have. I certainly was not doing the brand and creative piece. I came in when there was a particular situation where the company I was at had a a CMO who had come up through the brand world, and the CEO at the time was frustrated that we were not able to basically do the attribution, right? We weren't able to say how much of that, you know, tens of millions of dollars of spend actually was dedicated, was actually returning. So that's when I moved into that role.
Got it. Cool. So fast forward to today, SalesLoft, roughly how many reps are you guys supporting and what's the size of the SalesLoft team?
Yeah, it's always like how many reps is always complicated because whether or not you include the certainly SDRs, account executives, account managers, depends on whether you include customer success and retention people. But all told, it's somewhere between 100 and 150, depending on how you measure things. And then we have like many companies, we have a decentralized revenue operations organization. So within sales ops, we're about 5 people. But then if you were to include sort of the diaspora of revenue operations with marketing ops people, customer success ops people, systems, business systems people, it's probably about 10 total. So it's, I guess that's roughly about a 10-1 or 15-1 ratio.
That is the sweet spot I found, 15-1. And then quickly, the sales tech stack you guys are running.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. We do audits from periodically, and we have so much sales technology. If I were to kind of go through the prospecting through account opportunities and so on. So we're obviously using LinkedIn Sales Navigator, probably like most of the rest of the world. We use ZoomInfo as well for our contact data, and we have used different providers over time. We're also big on intent data right now, so we have a bunch of intent data sources, demand-based Terminus, and G2. So those are 3 intent kind of base data providers. In the UK and Europe, we use Cognizm for our contact data. We supplement ZoomInfo with Cognizm. And then, of course, we drink our own champagne, so we use SalesLoft for sales engagement. That ties into Salesforce. And then bits and pieces of lots of other different technologies. Some of the more, I guess, interesting ones are things that we use for direct mail, which is having a bit of a resurgence. And we use 2 things for that. We use Sendoso, which we're super happy with, and we also use Alice, A-L-Y-C-E. So that's just a taste of dozens and dozens of sales and marketing tech that we use in our stack.
Got it. And are you feeding in that direct mail piece into the SDR cadence? So someone may get is that how that?
Yeah, we do, both for SDRs and for AEs. So they have a certain budget that they can use each month on both of those platforms, Sendoso and Alice. Sendoso tends to, we'll do more like coffee cards and that kind of thing, like lower end gifts via Sendoso, sort of the quick thing to get people's attention. And then we'll typically use Alice more for a highly qualified prospect, and we're thanking them maybe after they do the first meeting. So it's more of a thank you as opposed to a get to know you. And then I didn't even mention, I don't know if we execute through Alice or through something else, but for certain prospects, we'll go further, that we're like most organizations, we're a charitable forward organization. So for in certain circumstances, we'll make donations on behalf of the individual to charity. So that's another kind of vehicle that we use, and it does good and helps out the sales cycle at the same time.
Got it. And because you use the word budget, monthly budget, are those tools kind of decentralized? Then you give the salesperson the budget and they use it where they see fit. You're not saying you have to send this person something at this point.
So in our cadence, it is a step in the cadence. So absolutely, they do get to choose whether or not, because their budget may have been exhausted. So they may have to skip that step in the cadence. So there's a degree of centralization to it, because they don't have an unlimited budget to do it. But here is where we recommend you do this within the cadence.
Got it. So I assume you guys have gone more remote over the past few weeks. What have you guys had to do as a sales ops team to ensure the productivity of the reps?
Interestingly, it was relatively smooth for us. I was commenting to another sales ops leader I was talking to yesterday about how much more that it's one of the, it's his head of sales ops over at bill.com. And we were commenting on how much more email and how many more phone calls we're getting right now. And I think it's a function of, you know, people have saved all these hours in their commute, and there's been a blurring of the line between work life and home life. Fortunately or unfortunately, I guess we, you know, everybody needs that separation and the break. So we have not, from a sales tech and operations and enablement point of view, there really has not been a huge change for us. You know, I don't want to oversell. I don't want to sell at all from the, you know, from the stage, as it were. But the fact that people were already using SalesLoft meant like they had prospects in Cadence already, so it wasn't a huge adjustment for them.
Got it. And have you had to tweak your forecast or what you're expecting to achieve over this year or next year? Has anything changed?
Yeah, that was the other thing I've been talking to my peers about. I think that's, you know, after I think your first question about adjustments for remote working is usually the first question. The second question is, how has the forecast changed? It's probably the most common thing I hear and I talk about with everybody I meet. Yeah, absolutely. The forecast has been updating. So we actually, I mean, we're pretty sophisticated in the way we do forecast modeling. That, you know, we do this, the typical data collection that everyone does, right, with stage weighted pipeline and forecast category, right, your best case pipeline commit sort of thing. But we layer on top of that a bit of data science so that at any day in a month or any day in a quarter, we have multiple models that are predicting where we will end for that period, and they're statistical models. So I think it's not that we had to change the underlying models, but the models have been outputting, you know, very different answers in real time as the COVID pandemic has evolved. So
Since you've been at SalesLoft, and I'm putting you on the spot here, Jeremy, what's the one thing that you've done which has had the biggest impact on rep productivity?
I would say the biggest thing we've done in sales ops that has had an impact on productivity is account scoring, and that relates into territory assignment. That our reps, like all reps, would go through a tremendous amount of data, right? Industry size, tech stack, opportunity history, on and on and on, right? Factor after factor after factor, intent data, all of this stuff, right? So many signals that they were trying to find, you know, or so much noise that they were trying to extract the signal out of. So another kind of statistical thing that we did was we created an algorithm that uses all of those firmographic intent activity. There's probably now 10 or 15 factors that are inside that model. So that model actually gives us an account score. So now reps don't have to spend all that time going through all that information. At first, they were wary of it because they still wanted to do their same thing and they had to ride the change management curve. But once they found, and that takes a good, 3 to 6 months, but once they found that, hey, these accounts that I would find are good, this particular score, one of my colleagues named it the Cerebro score. When they look at the Cerebro score, they trust that score. So that saves them a tremendous amount of time in identifying accounts.
Yeah. So there's, whenever introducing this kind of scoring, there's almost the gray period of trust or no trust where the reps are like, oh, not sure. But then once it clicks and they can forget about whether the number's accurate or not, then that's where you see the drive in productivity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think everything, it relates to every change. It's a human thing, but particularly in sales operations, right? Is like salespeople are, like humans are risk averse when it comes to changing what they're doing, right? That they get, so they build their habits and so on. And they really do look to their peers to see who's maybe at the bleeding edge and successful, or they'll check things a million times until they believe it. It relates to when I was in marketing. We would send over leads and we'd have to be really, really careful that if we started a new lead source, that the leads that were flowing over were like the best leads, because if they got one bad lead from that new lead source, they would throw the whole lead source out and assume that all of them were bad. So yeah, you got to be really delicate with these things.
That's hilarious, isn't it? They're like, as soon as the salesperson sees this crazy new thing, which might not be good, they're like, nope, never, I can't. Those leads are rubbish.
Yeah, absolutely.
On to metrics then. If you could only measure one sales-related metric for the rest of your sales ops career, which would you choose?
Can I do one metric by role, or it has to be one metric to end all metrics?
I think it would have to be one to end all.
I would say it would be, you know, there's, I'm a big fan of Jason Jordan and Michelle Vazen. I can't always get her name wrong. Vazena, I think. And they wrote a couple books called Cracking the Sales Management Code. And then there was another one, I think, called Crushing Quota after that one. And they talk about this progression from activity to results with this intermediate stage, and they have a different name for it, but I just call it effectiveness. So I would measure an effectiveness metric, and if it were prospecting centric, because I think you know if you don't fill the top of the funnel, then the rest is not gonna happen. So the measure I actually look at is the number of ops created per activity. I think that like that effectiveness measure to me is probably the one I would measure.
Cool. So you're basically measuring whether the rep is good at their job.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I mean, if I just measured activity, it might be bad activity, right? And results is a lagging indicator. So I can't, if I'm just measuring results, I can't actually do anything about it. So I love that intermediate thing, which is, hey, you know, you're spending 50% more activity than your colleague in order to get an opportunity. Here's what they're doing. So if you do these things, you can be much more efficient. So I really love those kind of efficiency or productivity or effectiveness ratings.
Got it. And then obviously over time, once you're giving that rep who's not so good the tips or the strategies from the other one, you're going to want to see those effectiveness metrics.
Yeah. I mean, I used to work for, at one point in my career, I spent a span of about eight years working for former McKinsey partners and senior associates. And that's one of the sort of hallmarks of McKinsey is around business optimization, is that you find these bright spots, you find these people in any population of, you know, people, business, or in a social context, there's always like, even if things are going poorly, there's always some bright spot in there where things are going well. So ditto with reps, right? Is you can always segment your reps into whatever top 10%, middle 80, bottom 10. And, you know, I think the key to having a successful, impactful sales operations organization is that you're sniffing constantly to understand who the top 10% is in any particular metric, understand what behaviors they are exhibiting that the, you know, the other 90% are not, and then go teach them how to do that. And then obviously inspect and expect in order to get the change.
Got it. And then final question, who has inspired or educated you the most in sales operations?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's a sort of a cop out of an answer, but it's no one person. I'm really fortunate, like you, to do webinars and podcasts and that sort of thing. So, I host a podcast, and on that podcast, you know, I've now had something like 120 probably guests, and as people ask me who's my favorite guest, and I say I like all of them, which again sounds like a cop-out answer, but it's I learn something from everyone I talk to, and I think that's, you know, that's a bit of my cop-out answer. It's like the same thing. I got my PC stacked up on a pile of books so that the camera is about eye level right now, and the ditto is like I've almost never read a book that I didn't get something valuable or provocative or thoughtful of, and as long as I get one. You know, most sales books are whatever, 200, 250 pages. As long as I get one nugget, even just one new provocative thing to think about, you know, I'm happy about that. I just read a very small book. I think it's like a 100-page book by George Bronton, And I'm actually going to be having him on my podcast in a little while. So I always read people's books cover to cover. And he makes some very provocative statements, for example, about the application of AI in sales and sales operations. So even those provocative statements, even though the rest of the book is the things that I was familiar with, like, and yes, I'm familiar with that. It just got me thinking, you know, is like, what is the role of AI in complex B2B sales? So again, long-winded answer, but no one resource, but an infinite army of resources that educate me every day.
Got it. Just before I finish off, the name of the podcast so the listeners can go and check it out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's called Hey Salespeople.
And
yeah, they can find it on all the usual sources. And then I also I'm pretty open about LinkedIn. So if you're a real human being, you know, with a real photo and a real bio, please connect with me on LinkedIn. And then every day I drop one sentence basically that I have learned from someone else. So from a book or a podcast or a conversation with somebody. And it reflects kind of what I want to consume on LinkedIn, which is I don't want self-promotional stuff. I want immediately actionable data-driven stuff on sales. So that's what I try to do is create what I would want to read.
Sure. Amazing. So a learning from everyone, that's the first one. But the one thing that I think is super important for the audience is your point about business optimization. And however, let's say you join a new company as running sales ops and things are not going that well, there'll be some segment, some one rep maybe who's doing something well. And so you're sniffing, as the word you used, to then go find that and then take it to the other reps and ideally measuring that somehow. That's the thing that I think that everybody listening can potentially benefit from. And the second small one was when you roll something new out, like a new lead source, try and manage the process so you do build the trust with the reps so they do actually use it and benefit from that. Yeah. So
I'd add one thing to that, by the way, which is so critical, or maybe the sort of on the change thing. One is you absolutely need CRO level support. Two is, yes, enablement is critical for training, but the third thing, which is probably the most important, is that I learned in the course of my career, if your sales managers don't drive the change and believe in the change, it will not happen. So your first line sales managers are like the critical catalyst for change. You cannot skip that step. Train them first.
Awesome. Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.